The Green Room with Orla Barry on News Talk.
Writing, when it goes well, brings me such joy, and that joy is like being gloriously drunk. But it's always followed by a desperate hangover of guilt. So said author Donal Ryan, whose novels have twice been nominated for the Man Booker Prize. He's also the Irish Book Ambassador for the inaugural Irish Book Week, which kicked off today and runs until November 3rd. Donal, welcome to the show.
Hi, Orla. Thank you very much.
And do you remember making that statement about the joy and the guilt and the drunkenness?
I do. I slightly regret it, actually. But I almost always regret things I say in interviews.
Is it true, though? Is there an element of truth to it?
I suppose there is, yeah. I suppose the guilt stems from a few different places, but one of the things is the fact that I guess paid to do something that I love doing. And there is an element of guilt with that. I'm not sure exactly why, but it just seems as though I'd be doing it anyway. And to be able to get paid for it is just this huge, just this amazing thing, really, that sometimes I think I've spent my quota of good fortune in life a bit early, but
you could say that, but you did go through many rejections before you got to the first stage, so it's not as if you can say that you kind of swanned in and got published at the age of 18 with your first attempt or anything.
No, it's true, and I suppose in a way I'm glad I wasn't, because things I wrote at the age of 18 wouldn't have been that great, and I guess I was given a chance to develop as a writer, but you know, I think every writer goes through that period of struggle where you just try and try and try, and it just seems to no avail. It just seems that nothing you ever write is going to ever catch anyone's attention, and you know, and you might get a lucky break eventually, but there's a lot of luck involved with the whole thing, really.
Yeah. Do you do it because it was all that chat over a year ago when you said you were going back to work for a while, etc. And then I think you did leave that job in the end, the civil service job. Do you write full time now, or are you teaching as well?
I was only a full time writer for 3 months of my life.
Oh, were you?
In those 3 months, I didn't write one word, like not a solitary word. I don't think I even sent an email, actually.
Why not? What happened?
Well, I mean, I took a career break from work, and then I started to work as writer-in-residence here at UL, and now I work here at UL full-time as a lecturer, so I teach on the MA in creative writing with Joseph O'Connor and Sarah Moore Fitzgerald and Martin Dyer as our writer-in-residence. It's fantastic, you know, because really, it was kind of like going back to work was kind of never not in the cards for me, you know. I was on a sabbatical, and it was never that big a deal, but, you know, things kind of tend to get blown a bit out of proportion sometimes.
And those 3 months when you know you were taking the career break and you were trying and the writing wasn't happening, was it not happening because of that feeling of not having the sort of the inspiration of whatever was happening in daily life, or was it just felt too odd to not be under pressure maybe by another job and having to squeeze in the words after you had finished doing the day job?
That was kind of it. I just couldn't believe the freedom I had. It was the first time since I was about 14 that I didn't have a job. You know, I always had a part-time job when I was in school and college and stuff. And it was the first time ever that I felt as though I had freedom. But also, I'd been paid in advance to write 3 books that I hadn't really started. You know, they only existed as kind of vague ideas and bundles of notes. And it was the first time I'd ever been paid in advance for work I hadn't done. So that brought its own kind of inordinate pressure. And the pressure and the kind of the feeling of freedom that I had, they kind of clashed, and they ended up, you know, creating this kind of cocktail of things that caused me almost complete paralysis. So I wasted 3 months really just relaxing.
And
it was nice 3 months. It was very pleasant, but I didn't get much done.
You didn't get much. And how did you get out of the paralysis then? Go back to work?
Yes, I was offered. Well, you know, an opportunity came up to be a writer in residence at UL, and then I was given an office, which was great. So I was kind of back in a situation where I had a job to go to, so it made writing a kind of 9-to-5 job. So I was teaching and mentoring students and writing as well in an office, and so I felt an obligation every morning when I got up to go to work. So it seems to be, for me, I need to actually leave the house and go to work to get anything done.
Yeah. Did you talk to other writers? I'm sure you did, Donal, about that at the time. How they, because, you know, there's some writers do it full-time, others don't, as you do. They try and do other jobs around it if they can do it. Did you sort of seek advice from anyone to say, how did you do it, or how can you do this?
I did, actually, and I realised that absolutely everyone is different. You know, some people were telling me they get up at 5 in the morning and write for a couple of hours. and then they feel that their day's work is done. And some people, you know, slog at it all day, every day. And, you know, I know a writer who finished the book and then the next morning will start their next book religiously, you know, will pretty much never take a day off. And so it's different for absolutely everybody. You know, I realise that. And so, you know, it's great to get advice and get a bit of help and get a steer now and again, but you have to kind of plough your own furrow and strike your own note and kind of work out what works for you.
Yeah. So when you're teaching in UL, I imagine there's plenty of students looking for advice. And, you know, you had said before that everyone kind of said to you, you would be a writer and you'd always been writing. But then it took time to actually get that first book into print and then to get published, etc. So when students are asking you now, what should I do? Should I put my head down and just try and get the first book out there at the age of, you know, 18, 19, whatever age they might be? What do you tell them?
Well, the real struggle is finding your voice. And that's kind of this nebulous term, really. But you have to write and write and write, I think, to start to get flow into your writing and to kind of to develop your own singular voice and to start to feel good about what you're writing. And the two things you have to do, because I think it's dangerous to be very prescriptive or proscriptive when it comes to writing, but the two things you definitely have to do is you have to read and you have to write. Otherwise you can't write. And it sounds really obvious, you know, but it's a voice that's not always taken. I know loads of people who could be great writers, you know, and definitely have a great facility and a great way of putting things in, a great storytelling talent, but just don't write. It can be hard. It can be a slog. You know, it sounds like it's the easiest job ever, sitting down and tapping away at the keyboard. But it's actually a bit of labour. You know, there's a real effort involved in it, and it can be wearying at times, and it can be daunting. The thing is just to sit down and bash it out. Really, try to be coherent.
What does the Man Booker nomination do to you as a writer? First and second time. Then, so first time, I guess it gives you incredible validation.
Yeah, it was great. I remember the feeling. Cause I had this fantasy for years when I was a kid. I think it started in 94, wasn't it, or 93, when Roddy Doyle won the Booker. I was thinking, imagine ringing home and saying to Mum and Dad, all got nominated for the Booker Prize. Yeah. It was a big deal in our house. You know, we always kind of got the Booker books every year, and my parents always followed it. And so when it happened, yeah, it didn't feel real at all. It didn't feel real the second time even. It was great because it gets, you know, it gives the book exposure. But if you look at the books that were eligible, you know, the 2 years that I was nominated, I mean, it's such a lottery. You know, you can never tell. It depends on who's on the panel and what kind of books they like and what, you know, what appeals to them. So it's very, you know, there's no way you can say for definite that every book is longlisted definitely deserves it. And of course, you have loads of people who say, like, God, don't write in the longlist, it's ridiculous. And they'll write a long thing about why the book shouldn't be there. And try to kind of not look at these things, but it's hard not to.
I was going to just ask you that then. Do you read that kind of stuff? If there's a potential negative review or reviews at all of your book, if you know it's going to be reviewed in the Times or the Guardian, do you read them?
Oh yeah, and I think I sometimes hear writers claim they don't read reviews, but I think everyone does, to be honest. It can be great when you get a good review. It's great, you're euphoric and it's fantastic, and you think this is great. Now people read this and it'll get out there, and people think it's a great book because it's got a good review and people will buy it. But you know, I mean, it's pretty much 50-50. Like, I mean, every book I've brought out so far, I've had at least one stinker in an Irish or a UK newspaper, usually in the week before the book comes out, you know. Which really frustrating, to be honest. But there's nothing you can do about it. You've no control at all over that.
No, you don't. And I was going to say, you know, you can also equally in a review, which might be an amazing review, have the reviewer saying there was one character or one aspect of the story that they didn't like or they didn't get or they didn't think worked. Are you able to walk away from that and say, well, it didn't work for them, but I'm not going to dwell on this one negative sentence that they said?
Sure. I mean, really, like the only voice that matters inside your head is your own. You know, if you let all the other voices in, it's just chaos in there.
Yeah.
You can't let other people write your books for you. And you can't, you know, I mean, you have to have a part of your focus fixed on your eventual reader.
Yeah.
But you can't let other people, you know, get into your head and kind of knock your confidence. You have to get over the blow and move on.
And move on. It's the inaugural Irish Book Week.
Yeah.
So what does that mean? Does it mean you just want everyone to start to keep reading your books, to go out there and buy your books?
God, no, really. I think the best thing for me about Book Week is that it is a kind of promotion of Irish bookshops. And I didn't realise myself until I got published and I started to go to bookshops a lot around the country to do readings and signings and stuff, you know, the amount of things that bookshops do besides sell books, and it seems now like such a tragedy for people to enrich Amazon, you know, this huge faceless corporation, when you can take a walk to your local bookshop and walk into a place full of books, a warm, welcoming place, and have a look around and buy some books. And I mean, you know, if there's a book that you can't get in the shop on that day, they'll order it for you. It'll take the same length of time that Amazon will take. I just love bookshops, you know, and they really are, you know, they really enrich the communities that they're in. And I've never met a bookseller, actually, who's in it for the money.
For
you know,
the money.
Really, it seems like a vocation for people. Anyone I know who owns a bookshop or works in a bookshop, they just seem to love what they do and have a real passion for it.
Yeah. Well, and you could say it equally about writers. I don't know that there's many or any writers really in it for the money, because it ain't the business to get into if you want to make big bucks.
No, it for sure isn't.
Well, at this point, your latest book is out there, Man Booker Prize nominated, as I said, From a Low and Quiet Sea. You've moved on to something else, Donal, I imagine, have you?
I have. Yeah, I finished a book just a few months ago, and I just got my edits back recently from my editor Brian Langan, so I have to start work fairly soon on those. So it's nice, it's kind of a relief to be kind of in a way a book ahead, you know.
And how does that look like when he sends the edit back? Is there a lot of work to be done, or how does it? Yeah,
the real slog starts then, because I find, you know, the early drafts when I'm writing the book and kind of giving it its shape and its story and, you know, populating it with its characters, sometimes you hit this kind of flow where it stops feeling like work, you know, and it starts, you just get this kind of, it just really, I just get this joy from it. And the editing process can be more laborious, and it can be more technical, and that's where you have to really, really fix your focus on who's going to read this book and how readable it is, you know, and you're kind of, your artistic integrity can take a little bit of a battering when you get to this point, but you know, editing is a real art. I'm lucky to have such a talented editor in Brian. But it's hard work as well.
Yeah. Well, we better let you get back to it, because you got the day job and you got the books to write as well. And you're also Irish Book Ambassador. It is the inaugural Irish Book Week. The message is, get out there, support your local bookstore. Go to your local bookstore and you can get Donal's books or many others. He's not demanding that you just buy his work. It runs until November 3rd. Donal, great to talk to you. Thanks so much for joining us here this evening. Cheers. Okay. All the best.
Bye.
That's Donal Ryan there. And as I said, inaugural Irish Book Week. He is the Irish Book Ambassador, running until November 3rd. This is The Green Room on News Talk.
News Talk 106 to 108.